Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live Special number 281, recorded Monday, April 18th, 2016. The NAB Show, Part 1. This TWiT Live Special brought to you by Braintree. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every kind of payment from any device with one easy integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/TWiT. Welcome to the NAB Show. Leo Laporte with Father Robert Ballesere, the digital Jesuit. He's wearing the Princess Leia earphones today. Looks good.
You're my only hope.
And we are here in the Live U booth at the NAB Show, which is a big show for broadcasters, broadcast engineering. But what's really interesting, we started covering NAB a few years ago, and what's really interesting, it's become a show that is just as interesting to an average person who wants to create content as to a professional broadcaster, I think.
Right. Now, if you step back 6 years, NAB was all about the professional. So you had satellite vans, you had broadcast trucks, you had all the physical plant you need to set up your own studio. Now most of these companies realize that there's a huge market for the amateur content creator, which would include, you know, technically TWiT. You know, we would fall in that amateur level.
Oh, yes, very much so.
But, I mean, the market is burgeoning for people who just want to make content.
Yeah, it's exciting. A few years ago, Black Magic, for instance, would come to this show and always be the kind of the redheaded stepchild in the corner that the pros would go, well, that's nice for consumers. Now I think they somewhat dominate the show because their low-cost devices are UHD. Mm-hmm. They make switchers that are under $1,000. So for a lot of people who don't want to do what we do with a TriCast or an expensive studio, they can do that.
Yeah, and it's really forced the industry to rethink how they position their products, because if you don't at least offer a few items, a few services that can be accessed by, we'll say, the lower tier of broadcaster, then you're really shutting yourself out of an incredibly lucrative market. Not only that, what I've loved about the show is this is better than CES for telling us when we're actually getting the next special.
Yeah, feature. It's not so much blue sky. It really is.
Yeah, it's here.
Broadcast engineers are not going to accept that. They come here. They come here to buy.
Right. Exactly.
This is not a dealer's show as much as it is as a direct to the customer show, right. And that makes it much more interesting. You're also seeing, and I know you're big into drones. We call you the drone father. You're also seeing a lot of really interesting uses of drones. Just to the left of us here, Shotover has a massive industrial strength drone. It's 6 foot wingspan, capable of carrying, professional cameras into the air. That's really remarkable. John, you just cut our headphones up here. So we're at the Live U booth. I really want to thank the folks from Live U for providing this space for us. It's beautiful. First of all, we've moved from the South Hall, which really, really the realm of the, well, let's face it, we were across the aisle from the butt kicker, subwoofer station. To the central hall where the big boys are.
This is right? Where all the big boys and their toys live.
This is, it's kind of, I mean, there's GoPro. I mean, this is, we're right across the aisle from FEMA and the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, or IPAWS, which is kind of a nice, cuddly name for something that you really don't ever want to hear.
I also like the fact that if we have a natural disaster, we're right here.
We're right here. Yeah. FEMA's with us. We also want to thank Panasonic, who's provided some amazing PTZ cameras. We'll give you a little tour of those in just a second. But first, let's say hi to Mike Civello. He is the VP of Sales at Live U. Mike, it's great to see you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for joining us in the Live U booth this week.
Live U makes it possible for, it used to be people like me, and now it's professionals, to go out in the field and stream anywhere. You don't need a sat truck. You just need access to an LTE network. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And we have enabled a new brand of content. I mean, obviously, all the broadcasters are using us for news production. But now we're producing products that are much more accessible to even the low-end producers who can do any streaming event that they want, no matter where they happen to be.
And just if you were wondering, well, how good can the quality be? You're watching right now. We are not hardwired in.
Nope.
Which makes me a little nervous. You were watching, the stream you're watching right now is being streamed back to Petaluma from a Live U box.
Yes.
using LTE networks.
Yes.
And you bond a bunch of networks together.
We do. We can bond as many as 14 connections together in a single product. But most of our systems go out with either 6 or 8 or 12. But we basically work in just about any environment, any LTE area of the world, really.
We were early adopters. We used LiveU at E3. We used it very famously at South by Southwest. I wore a LiveU backpack to body surf the crowd at the Dignation event at Stubbs in 2010, 6 years ago. But that backpack was big. It was heavy. This is the new LiveU unit.
You're
wow.
A long way, yeah. So this is called LiveU Solo.
Hand it to me because we're gonna give you a little chance to try the PTZs. Brian, are you ready? All right. Yeah, that's not where I am now. Pan, down, zoom.
Enhance.
Center, enhance. Pan, zoom. We probably should have tried this before.
What's going on?
The back of my head.
Oh,
all right,
hey,
there you go. There's
the
LiveU unit. And now we can zoom in on that, right, Brian? Look at that. Brian, have you ever used this before? All right, he's never used this before. One of the neat things about this Panasonic is you can control it via an iPad. And maybe I should take over control of it. There we go. So this is called the Solo. Why Solo?
So LiveU Solo. So it's basically it's for people who just want to go live at the entry level part of the marketplace. So it supports up to 2 cellular connections. It supports Wi-Fi. It also has a LAN port in it.
This is nice to have Ethernet because if you have Ethernet, of course, that's the most reliable. But the fact that we're using 3G and LTE here in a hall jammed with people on cell phones. Years ago, this was a tough thing to do.
It was.
Colleen Henry, our engineer, built, it was kind of jerry-rigged, a jerry-rigged box that allowed us to use 4 connections. We can never use it because the cell signals were just jammed. But now, I don't know how you're doing it. This kind of magic. You're able to do this incredible stream. What's our bit rate, John? What are we streaming at? Do you know? It's really incredible connection. So this is the SDI connector. That'd
SDI
be for a camera.
And you have HDMI, so you can use either interface.
And that's for consumers. Of course, pros are going to use SDI, but a lot of consumer cameras have live HDMI out.
Exactly. And you can start off with HDMI and upgrade to SDI if you upgrade your to a more professional type of product.
So, how much is that?
So this product retails for $1,500, $1,495.
Wow.
So,
that is really remarkable.
It's built for the independent producers, for the production guys who want to provide streaming services.
It looks like a little tower box. It's a little mini thing. It's not very heavy.
Directly to your CDN. So you just pick whatever CDN you're streaming through, whether it's YouTube, Wowza, Akamai, Limelight, whoever it happens to be, and this just instantly sends your stream there. But it uses all the LiveU technology to get it there.
That's nice. Having a Wowza endpoint and going to that or exactly. Livestream or somebody really makes a big difference. And, of course, your controls are up here. I wish I'd been able to body surf with that. It would have been a lot easier.
Yeah, it definitely would have been easier. Put it in your pocket.
I could have put that in my pocket.
You know, I didn't get to play with a LiveU until I came to Twit, and we didn't really use it in one of our live events until 2 years ago at CES, and it was Lisa Laporte, who said, okay, we're going to use this backpack, and we're going to stream directly to the studio so that the editors can edit in real time, rather than waiting for what we used to do, which is take the entire day's take and then upload 60 gigs, which was never fun. And both my producer and I were thinking, it's not going to work. You know, you're inside of a convention center, which is a big metal box. Everyone's on their cell phone. So I don't care how many channels you bond, we're still going to have to upload it because the quality won't be there. And we were pie-faced. It was perfect.
It's really
absolutely
amazing.
Perfect.
And we even use it after the fact when we pre-record stuff to stream it back to the studio because we have a LiveU endpoint at the studio and we'll stream back. So it's a great way for us without ever being tethered to gather content, to create content, to produce it live or on tape. I'm showing my age. And
what's this tape you speak
tape.
Of, Leo?
Well, it was film.
Oh, yes.
So, wow, this is really, that's pretty cool. And I want to thank you for letting us do this in the beautiful LiveU studio here on the central hall, the show floor with the big boys. It's really fun.
Yeah, it is.
So what are you hearing? Who is using LiveU? What kind of people are using it in what situations?
So we have lots of different people using us. So we're big in news and broadcast. We're used more than 50% of the time when you ever see a broadcast television station or network cutting to a live reporter in the field.
A lot of times now it's this, right?
The feed is coming through.
It's so expensive. You roll a truck, exactly. And remember they raise the microwave antenna, and there are a few. We see still a few on the show floor here. Now they could just do it, put it in their pocket.
Exactly. And for these types of devices now, we're seeing a lot of the smaller little production companies who are doing a lot of streaming services are starting to use this. So during the Manny Pacquiao build-up to the latest fight with Floyd Mayweather, we had this being used to stream all of the pre-boxing, pre-match content. So
see, that's what I like. When you marry things like the TriCaster, the LiveU, that makes it possible to do inexpensive stuff. You see a lot more behind the scenes, quote, you know, semi-pro or less big-time stuff. But frankly, that's the stuff I find the most interesting. Always.
Yeah, and we're working very closely with NewTek as well. So NewTek has this new interface called NDI, which is their network device interface.
Will this support that?
And actually, so our back end does support it today. So
nice.
We actually have announced support for NDI in our latest version of software, and we're showing that here at the show. So so we can now communicate directly with the TriCaster without actually plugging SDI cables in between the technologies.
Tech T Pro is in our chat room. We, of course, have a live chat room going all the time. And he asks about data rates, data minutes. Is it just a consumer... You know, do I just buy some minutes from AT&T and Verizon, or how
you can?
Yeah,
so you can plug in any USB based modem that you can get from your local cell carrier, whatever.
That's
whatever
why the USB ports. All right,
exactly, yeah. And that will give you whatever data plan you sign up for. And data plans are pretty cheap these days in the U.S.
In the bigger boxes, you actually have card slots that you can add.
You do. The bigger boxes have these special modems with special RF antennas built on the end of them that really accentuates the connectivity to the cell towers. So, and it makes it much more reliable.
Is that what we're using now? I can't.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, you got
it's
one.
Pretty
of the
amazing.
Boxes.
How many? Do you know how many carriers we're using? Does somebody have the interface? John's going over there. He has to go.
He should be using all four of the carriers.
All four carriers. Yeah, I would bet. But it's amazing when you see. I mean, look, there are people streaming from their cell phones on that same band right now. I mean, it's amazing we could do it. Yeah, John.
7.21 megabits.
Wow, 7.21 megabits. That's why per second. So that's why it looks. That's HD quality.
That's
amazing.
That's good bandwidth, yeah.
Mike,
yeah.
We've got a question from the chat room. They were wondering about what the magic is. So how do you bond it? How do you get all the channels together? How do you get that aggregate bandwidth up? Is that a special sauce from LiveU?
It is, and actually that's the magic. So this is our 10th year, believe it or not. We're having our 10th anniversary party. This is our 10th year at NAB.
Congratulations.
And we've been working on that special sauce for all 10 years, so we've done a pretty good job of it. But the ability to combine those connections together and deal with the realities of the cellular networks, if you think about a cellular network, bandwidth goes up and down constantly within that cellular network. It doesn't just stay constant at a certain bit rate, right, because there's all this competition for it. So the ability to deal with the realities of the fluctuations in cellular networks is really what's really critical to our technology. The other thing is the transport. You have to have resilient transport because you're going to drop frames. You're going to have issues where the bandwidth does drop out, and you're going to need to be able to recover from that. And how you deal with that recovery, that's all part of that secret sauce as well. So we have a technology called LRT, LiveU Reliable Transport, which couples to our bonding technology and makes this a very reliable source of transmission.
You better than anybody probably noticed the improvement in cell data rates. Are the carriers really improving their
They are. 4G is pretty well available now in almost all the carriers across the country. Of course, there's still lots of pockets where there's only 3G available, but the carriers have come a long way.
And you'll work on 3G. It's not that you won't.
It works. Yeah. We actually launched this product in 2G.
Yeah, I remember.
When we first started the company. So,
So
4G is great.
But, and you'll support the newer, the Super LTE that's coming down the road, things like that.
We do, yeah. Advanced LTE support is coming as well, and that'll be available soon from some of the carriers.
I just love that the design of this is like a little tower.
I noticed
it's so cute. It's got little feet.
Is that an SD card slot in the back?
Yeah.
There is.
So you
can record locally?
You can, yeah.
Oh, that is great.
So you can do store and forward as well. So if you're in an area where you don't have great bandwidth, you can record to the unit, and it'll upload as soon as the bandwidth is available.
This would be perfect to combine with one of the new Blackmagic micros that don't have recording ability on board.
Right.
So you just push it via SDI to this.
There you go.
It records locally and streams.
And streams. We like to do that. We like to record locally in case something goes wrong with the stream. We always have a backup. It's a perfect way to do it, frankly.
Belt and suspenders.
Yeah. Hey, it's so great to see you, Mike. Thank you so much for letting us use your facility here and be part of the NAB show this year.
Well, thanks to Twit and obviously our partners Panasonic and NewTek as well. We're very happy to have you this year.
Well, guess what? Panasonic's next.
Great.
Thank you, Mike. Mike Civello, he is the VP of sales at LiveU. I'll just keep this here. I guess you probably want that. But we lease a LiveU and we use it every month. We love it. Thank you, Mike.
We've worked with you for a long time and we certainly enjoy the partnership.
We're going to keep doing it. I mean, we couldn't do this. This really, you know, of course you can negotiate
right.
with the Las Vegas Convention Center for bandwidth, and cross your fingers that you get it. If you, we in the past have always been able to make deals with the NAB show or with CES to do that, but it's so much nicer if we can use the live view. And I love the idea of live streaming, not just on a stage, but walking down the aisles. That is a remarkable first-person experience that you can get, and I just love it.
And it really changes the tenor of the content, because when you know that you can get those shots, it changes how you plan your event.
Well, you do that at Showstoppers and the other events. Were you at Showstoppers last night?
Oh, yeah.
Got absolutely. Some good stuff, you think?
Got a few things, yeah. Some interesting items for people who maybe make content.
Yeah. And what we do, and I love this, is we will stream live, even if we don't intend to make it a show. I know our audience at home likes to watch as you're, you know, watch the sausage being made.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really gristly, but they get to watch.
Well, it's one of the things that Twit does. It's not a TV station.
We don't.
You see everything.
We want to break the fourth wall. We don't want to, like, not, you know, be all polished. And obviously we're very good at not being.
I am so unpolished.
let's say hello to Michael Bergeron. He is a media and production technologist at Panasonic. Michael, great to have you. Welcome.
Nice
to
here.
See you. And you have provided for us these incredible PTZ cameras. Tell us about these.
Okay, well, this one is unfortunate. It's kind of a bald spot cam. I'm a little disappointed about
No, it is. No, it's good. Watch. Here, show my coffee, Brian. It's a right. great coffee camera. Look at
right,
that.
There we go.
So I'll tell you why we do this and why it's important. We are always showing products, right? Mm-hmm. And we need over-the-shoulder product shots. So we, of course, have PTZs that mm-hmm. the audience can't see in front of us. Actually, right. they could, because you could, this is Inception, point a PTZ at a PTZ. I don't know. Is that like crossing the
streams?
You
go back in time, I believe.
There they are. So it really is great, because we don't have any camera operators, mm-hmm. as you can see. We don't need camera right. operators. The guy running the TriCaster, Brian Burnett, can control the PTZ, mm-hmm. can shoot the cameras. This is great.
Well, you know, another thing we were able to do, and it is with that particular one that I noticed up there, is it also has an AWHEA10, which is another kind of a controller. And what that does is it's shooting the whole audience and everything you see down there and us. And that's streaming a picture to the iPad.
There's a camera on top of the camera. There's a small.
Yeah,
you can't see it. You're seeing the back of it right now.
We get a camera of the camera.
It would be very. Then we really have it. But there's a camera on top of the camera, which gives me a view through the iPad.
Right.
We actually don't have it set up yet, or I would show you.
Up here.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I would give me a view through the iPad.
Yeah.
And then I could do this as a host. And we're always looking for ways to fire people. So this really saves. Should I have not put it that way?
No, it's
forgive me, Father.
No.
No, we're not. No, we're always looking at ways to do this
I'm looking at
as
you,
everybody is nowadays,
right,
less
right.
expensively. And the idea
save
that
space, too.
Or save space, that's right. I mean, this becomes a switcher,
mm-hmm.
a little iPad. That's really cool.
Right.
That's
and
the
also,
HWEA separate.
HEA 10. Yeah.
You say it again.
HEA
10. HEA 10.
Yeah.
That's the separate unit that goes with the camera.
Right. And I can
here we
do
go.
Multiple cameras with it, and we do have it working.
Yeah. Well, they didn't want it. They didn't want to give it to me.
So the
I can't understand why.
Once you have it calibrated, you just use the touch screen, and I point to where
now,
I want
this,
the camera.
And then you point out, we're a little weird because we put this upside down. So the camera shot that is coming from the guidance camera is, as you can see, upside down. And then we use that to so it, this isn't That's, how it would well, normally look.
We'll have that flipped over by tomorrow.
Yeah, because we can flip this one. Yeah. We flip, but we can't flip the HEA view.
No, we'll do that.
I could use this to steer it.
Well,
oh,
whoa!
Apparently so.
That works really well.
Three things you can do.
Okay, Leo, don't touch the PTZ. Now you know why they didn't give me this.
Well, one is you can just point to where you want it to go.
Oh, that would be better. That's why it went there.
Yeah.
I was pointing
to
where I wanted it to go. Oh, I see.
You got to calibrate.
Now it's on a tuffet.
And when it's got multi, and you got a multi-touch.
I can pinch and zoom?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's
I can use
too
the multi-touch
cool.
multi-touch to do a zoom.
Unfortunately, this one's controlling the camera that would be getting the shot if you're doing that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I don't know. We've really,
really that's messed a good shot.
It up.
Oh, I like that. I like
going
that.
In circles.
Look, there's Russell. This is his. He wishes he was. Oh, we haven't calibrated it yet. Russell, you got to calibrate
it. We got to show off the audience.
Yeah, look at this audience.
Well, I mean, one place.
Don't they look like they're having fun? Yeah. You don't ever want to give Leo a PTZ. Hey, smile for the camera. You're on TV.
No, hi. This is NAB. There will be no smiles.
Yeah, these are engineers. They don't smile. They're trained professionals. So this is really, really neat. So I could pinch and zoom. Mm-hmm. I can. You mean it does it to the camera?
Yeah.
Whoa. This would be an interesting way to track some people out in the audience.
Let's see. Actually, it is. We do use it a lot for audience cameras and stuff. We've sold a lot of these in the universities, where they will have a couple of lecture cams set up, and then they'll have one face in the audience so that the instructor can sort of point it at whoever's asking the question.
How much?
Or whoever falls asleep.
How much is this going to send me back? Because I have to have one outside my house right now.
Well, actually, that's a good question. What's the difference between making one of these PTZs for, say, security use and for broadcasting use? I mean, obviously.
You do both, I'm sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you could. In fact, this is compatible with the controlling and recording system in our security cameras. So there are a lot of customers who will have some of these set up like in a large church. We've got some of these in the main sanctuary, and they've got security cameras elsewhere. When there's not a service going on, you can flip those over to the security server and have them double as security cameras overnight.
We had a call on Saturday, right, on the new screensavers.
Right? Yeah.
Guy records, he is the videographer for a school of rock class where they're teaching mm-hmm. teenagers how to play rock and roll. They do it at a giant it was a garage, right?
Yes.
In Knuckles, it was called. Knuckles.
Something Garage.
Knuckles Warehouse. Knuckles Garage. I think that was the name of it.
Really?
It was Knuckles Garage. What city was it in? It was St.
Kansas
Louis?
City?
Kansas City. And so this is the funny thing. He's the only guy. So he's running around with a handheld. He says, the problem with teenagers is some of them are little, some of them are big. Mm-hmm. I need a way to quickly move a camera, to re-center the camera while I'm running around with a handheld recording. And he wanted a PTZ.
Mm-hmm.
I think we found your PTZ. This is really, really cool. And I love it that you can. Now, this is this an iPad you're controlling?
Yeah, it's just an iPad. It's a free app you download.
Russell, you got to get me set up on this. I want to do this now. We'll have to calibrate it. That's all right.
It's okay.
we could have dueling PTZs. The TD wants it here. Leo wants it there.
Did you say how much it cost? I don't think you did. Probably you don't want it.
It's not a lot. It's not a lot. We were actually running a program where we were letting you get a free one if you bought a couple of PTZs.
We're not doing that right now. Not anymore. But so keep your IP.
It's not.
And
that,
you don't sell direct. You'll go to B&H
It's through authorized dealers, resellers, system integrators. They want one.
We jumped on this early on. We thought, this would be really cool, but we didn't have Panasonics. As you said, we had some weird.
We had a camera that people had suggested. They said this would be good, and the quality just wasn't there.
This is fantastic, right? I mean, this is as good as what we're using on the sticks.
Yeah, I mean, this is a PTZ. So this shot right now is coming off of a PTZ.
No.
It's got the right color balance and everything.
The image block and the optics in that camera are the same one that's in the handheld.
That's why it looks as good and why it matches so nicely. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much. It really is cool. Thank you for letting us use these. Michael Bergeron is Media Production Technologist, which is an excellent title. Let me ask you, actually, as long as you're here, you're probably keeping an eye on this whole space.
Mm-hmm.
It's changing rapidly, isn't it?
Is
it bringing it down to the level that a highly interested, motivated amateur or a prosumer can do this stuff now?
I think that's what we're seeing right now is a sort of a tipping point where you could do a prosumer live broadcast.
Yes.
I mean, because...
Welcome to our prosumer live broadcast.
I mean, okay, right. I guess it's a question of, where you had to have the lowest entry point for someone to do a live broadcast would be local access cable.
Right,
and
right.
Then came webcast.
Well, that's the thing.
And
it's completely
completely
replaced local mm-hmm. public access
yeah.
because anybody now can. And I think that the show floor, which used to be full of broadcast engineers,
mm-hmm.
probably half the people here now are people who are interested in doing their own media.
Oh yeah, yeah. When in fact, one of the things that we've added to these cameras about a year ago is besides the baseband HDSDI, HDMI, or whatever, probably the HDSDI that we're using here, there's also an RTSP streaming. Out of there that will
wow.
go directly to something like a Wirecast or a Wildstream
nice.
Server or one
wow.
of those. So you can do a single camera, just a camera, set it up, get control of the camera remotely over the internet.
Yeah, we're using SDI because we're connecting to a TriCaster.
Oh, yeah.
So we're using the HD SDI.
Actually, interestingly, you can also stream to the TriCaster. That's something...
through RTSB.
Yeah, yeah. And what we're showing is using the Kinect Pro to convert our RTSB to their NDI, which is their new IP system.
And I think it's telling that you're using an iPad for a controller, because that's not something broadcast probably is asking for.
Well, it's interesting. We show this to a lot of broadcasters, and we had some TDs who wanted to have one of their own.
Oh, there really?
Be an operator.
Right.
And
because traditionally it's done with a joystick,
trying to
explain right?
Explain it to the operator. They could say, "No, just go here.
Here, point, yeah. point that."
Exactly.
That so, is awesome.
I mean, because you can have multiple controllers on
right.
the network.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, you know, it's like multiple remotes, though. I guess.
A question: do the Panasonic PTZs do they support multicasting straight from the cameras?
Yeah. You can do multicasting with some of the streaming features.
Okay.
And I mean, generally, you're gonna get some other vendors involved and stuff. But yeah, straight from the cameras. I mean, a lot of times you want to take a switch program to go multicast. But if it's something where it's just a place of interest.
Exactly. I'm thinking like a multicasting to several clients nodes that are on mm-hmm. a network to mm-hmm. show display screens and such.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's really involves just interfacing with some of the other partners who are doing this, and that's we've been spending a lot. It's actually where I've been spending a lot of my time lately, is just getting to know the key folks at these companies.
Very exciting stuff. Well, thank you for we've got one, two, and one over the mm-hmm. behind us, right? Three.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's really these are our main cameras. Of course, Panasonic's on sticks in front of us. That is really, and I love it that they all match. I didn't realize it was the same pickup. So that's really great. It makes it very easy to do this. Instead of switching to a PTZ and it looks like you're on a security camera all of a sudden.
Exactly.
This is really great. Thank you so much. Michael Bergeron is a media production technologist at Panasonic. Have a great show.
Oh, great.
Thanks for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
We are at the Live View booth here in the Central Hall at the, they call it the NAB show now.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Well, it's like CES no longer stands for Consumer Electronics.
Yeah, I don't like
it. It's
that.
CES.
It's the National Association of Broadcasters. And it is a show that has been around for many years. I don't know what that... Actually, we're going to get somebody up here, the Vice President of Communications for NAB, who will explain to us how long this has been around. But I think this is. I remember coming to this show for years in radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and still is radio stuff here, which I'm glad to see.
One of my favorite parts about the show is you wander through and you see technology that I will never use. I will never use a satellite truck. But to see the tech that goes into it,
yeah.
It is amazing.
Yeah, it's really fun to see all that. Let's see. We're going to get... He's not... Mike, okay, well, that's fine. We'll get Dennis up here as soon as he comes. Just let us know. Colleen is doing such a great job, our new producer. You have done a stellar job putting this together. It's very hard to do these live events.
She keeps us on the rails.
And Colleen is really good, so thank you. I appreciate it. You may never, ever leave.
Twit's like the Hotel California.
You check in.
You
and then I
leave.
Check you out.
That's
no,
right.
That's wrong. I don't know. That's not. I didn't mean to say.
Wait
that.
A minute. Hold up.
A little later on, we're going to do triangulation. I'm excited. We have a very good guest for triangulation. We always do. That's kind of the. It's become our signature show. Matthew Wood will be here. He is supervising sound editor at Skywalker Studio,
and
the voice of
General Grievous.
What does General Grievous sound like?
He sounds like a wheezing robot cyborg.
Kind of is a wheezing
Jedi
robot.
Killer thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, General Grievous will join us later talking about sound design, sound editing. He worked on the latest Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Actually, I think that's his third or fourth Star Wars that he's worked on, so that's going to be a lot of fun. Later today, we're going to do iOS Today from the show floor here. Megan Maroney is here. And we will be talking about using your iOS device, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad or even maybe an Apple TV or an Apple Watch, to do media production. And I think Karsten, our producer, has arranged for a demo of the Mevo camera.
Ooh.
We're really interested in that. They're like two booths over. So
that's the one that's 360, and then you have the ability to use your
yeah,
device.
So instead of panning, tilting, and zooming the camera,
right.
The camera has 150 degrees... and a 4K sensor, so you can deliver a 1080p stream from any part of that 150-degree 4K range, which means you can effectively have four screens.
See,
and
I,
you switch with an iPhone, which is really remarkable.
I think that is one of the more interesting developments in the whole 150, 360, the basically persistent view cameras that are coming out, which is you can film and then you can refine later on. Because a 360 view is great, but it's not the ideal way to watch content.
Yeah.
You still want a director who says, okay, this is what this is what's important.
Yeah.
And you can do that. You can do it afterwards. You can go back through it and say, okay, now they should be focused on this. Now they should be focused on that. It's exciting.
I think DJI was the first one I saw with their Bebop drone, which had a non-movable camera, but it had a high enough res display, that, and it would correct for the barrel distortion.
Right.
It would just point. Did you go over to DJI yet? Have you seen any drones?
Yeah, we've been watching drones. I think the one you're thinking of is a Parrot product.
Oh, that's Parrot.
That's Parrot.
Not DJI.
Yeah.
It's the AR Parrot.
But no, DJI
right.
is
Absolutely
here in
right.
a big way. There's actually one manufacturer here who they're not mounting cameras on drones. They're mounting lights. So you can do an outdoor shot. It brings a 5,000 lumen light
oh,
up
no.
in the air. It's actually...
Get ready for the UFO reports.
I know, right?
Oh, no. That's hysterical.
I'm going to put lasers on mine.
Pretty soon everything will be floating, right?
Yeah.
We really won't need... We'll just everything be in the air, and we'll be on the ground waving at our overboard.
There's a tethered platform here. So someone has an octocopter that goes up with a 400-foot umbilical, so the thing can stay in the air indefinitely. There's
wow.
no battery limitation.
It just stays there.
It just stays there. So you can
wow.
you position it, say, okay, now it has a PTZ camera, and the director can look anywhere in 360 degrees, up, down, left, right. And then when you're done, you bring it back down, you put it in the carrying case, and you're out of there.
Well, let's say hi now to Dennis Wharton. He's the Executive Vice President of Communications for the NAB Show. Hey, Dennis. Great
awesome.
To see you.
Thanks.
Get right into that microphone. We're using very directional microphones because it's a little noisy in
well,
here.
Well, thanks for being here. It's we're off to a great start. We just had our keynote speeches with Bob Woodruff, the ABC journalist, and Ben Sherwood, who's president of the ABC Network.
Gordon it's exciting.
Smith, my boss gave a nice speech. And so we're off and running, and look at all these people. It's
Jason awesome. Howell scored an interview with Bob Woodruff earlier, so we're going to get a little of Bob Woodruff on TNT tonight.
What a great story.
Yeah.
Five weeks in a coma.
Amazing.
A roadside bomb.
He was blown up by an IED.
Absolutely.
Was it 2006?
Yeah, and he's since started a foundation. He's raised $30 million Good for veterans.
That's great.
Families, so.
When did the NAB show start?
1923.
23. So that was a radio show.
I wasn't
show.
Here, though.
No,
but,
neither was I.
No, but it started
Shortly
over,
thereafter.
It started over copyright issues.
And, interesting.
And we're still fighting this copyright issue.
Isn't that funny?
Same folks who involved radio stations playing music.
Right.
We're still sort of fighting
Isn't
with
that
record
funny?
Labels over that.
Isn't that funny?
It's never changed.
The record labels just don't understand. They just don't understand.
Right.
So was there a trade show back in the 20s?
No. So the broadcast industry started as a few broadcasters, as the FCC.
Getting together.
Giving licenses to radio stations.
Right.
And
that was back in the blue and red network days.
That's right,
yeah.
Exactly. So, and then the association has grown, obviously, by leaps and bounds, and we're probably going to have over 100,000 people here this
wow.
week. 1,700
wow.
exhibitors, the most ever. It's such a global trade show in terms of the number of people here and the companies and the countries represented. We have 166 countries represented, about a third of the attendees and a third of the exhibitors are from outside the U.S., so it speaks to the global brand of this trade show.
And I also have to say, it seems like it's more than just the traditional radio and television broadcast.
Well, the joke by some, which is not true, is that the NAB show stands for nothing about broadcasting.
That's not true.
Obviously. I mean, about 20,000 people are in the broadcast business, but you're right, it's the internet, it's satellite, it's cable. It's all forms of communication are here on display at this show.
And that's really a better way to think of it, because it doesn't really matter how you transmit the content.
Right. I mean, there was a conscious decision made about 20 years ago, do we expand beyond just traditional broadcasting?
Right.
And it was actually a somewhat controversial decision that we moved away from our space, but I think it's proven to be such a successful venture into other forms of communication. We get networking ideas. We partner with other forms of communication. So it's absolutely the right
thing. Well, and broadcasters want to learn about this as much as anybody else.
Absolutely.
This is part of their future.
Absolutely. I mean, if we wouldn't have embraced sort of the internet and other forms of communication where we would be.
It would not be a 100,000 people show with 1,700 booths, I can tell you that right now.
The thing that's amazing to me is how successful it's been over the years. I remember I was a reporter for Variety Magazine for a number of years, and I remember covering the press conference when NAB was announcing that they thought they were going to have over 50,000 people at the show. And now we're over 100,000. I mean, just look at the number of people walking this floor, and it's just a salute and tribute to the staff at the NAB.
Well, I have a deep love for broadcasting. I got my FCC third-class ticket in 1976, 40 years ago. I'll be celebrating my 40th year as a broadcaster this year. And it's a great... there's something magical about radio, about TV... But and as a broadcaster, I've really embraced the internet, and I really feel like it's all about reaching our audience, however we reach them.
Whatever platform we can be on, we want to be on. We want to respect copyright, obviously, but you can't be... This is not your father's broadcast.
No.
You have to be on cell phones. You have to be on laptops. Yeah. You have to be in the back seats of cars. And every one of our broadcasters now gets that, maybe 10 years ago.
They fought it for a while.
A little bit, but now, I mean, we're the most popular websites in most of the communities. Radio and TV stations.
Right.
So
we're
moving to a new generation of television standard that we talked about here this week called ATSC 3.0, which will allow us to do more things with spectrum to ultra HD, mobile television on your cell phone. So absolutely we're embracing all forms of distribution.
Sure, yeah. Is it the NAB show?
No, it's the NAB show.
Okay, I'm just checking.
A lot of people here don't even realize that most of the year we're an advocacy organization in Washington protecting the interests of radio and TV stations in front of Congress and the FCC. And we put on this little show out in Vegas of 100,000 of our close personal friends every year. But our full-time job is promoting us in Washington.
It's an industry trade association,
exactly.
National Association of Broadcasters.
Correct.
But when you get to the trade show, it is the NAB show.
Oh, no doubt. And,
you know?
This is the engine that drives the train in terms of revenue.
Yeah.
And, we've never raised dues in the 20 years that I've been in
That's
the
nice.
NAB
That's
because
nice.
Of the success of this trade show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's always fun coming here.
I walk past your building when I used to live in D.C. every day on my way to work. I think it's very important to remember that NDB is an advocacy group, which makes me wonder, one of the things that you've done incredibly well here at the show is you have combined what we might consider old school broadcasting and all the companies that supply equipment and services to old school broadcasting along with the best of new media.
Absolutely.
And those are two incredibly different groups, very different ways of looking at the creation of content.
Sometimes see each other as competitors
exactly.
even, right?
And that competitive spirit where sometimes the traditional broadcasters are saying, you're muscling in on our territory,
right.
And you have new media who's doing more things that look like traditional broadcasting. How do you play the advocate for both of those groups?
Well, so as I was mentioning earlier, it's not either or. From our perspective, it's both. You have to embrace the broadcast platforms of yesterday as it evolves into the broadcast platforms of tomorrow. For example, I just mentioned we're transitioning to next generation television, which is called, in engineering terms, ATSC 3.0.
That's the broadcast standard.
Which is a new broadcast standard, which allows mobility, allows you to do ultra high definition television. And on the radio front, we're trying to get radio chips, we're trying to get activated FM radio chips in cell phones so that you can receive over-the-air broadcast signals on your cell phone.
You know, it's so funny because the phones are built with them because internationally, that's very popular. You buy a phone and it has an FM radio in it.
And
why not here in the States?
Well, the chips are actually built in, but the carriers, the wireless carriers, who like blow through your data charges, so you pay a little extra, sometimes don't want to activate the chip. The good news is we've got AT&T that's activated the chip, Sprint, T-Mobile. We have a couple of outliers, Verizon, Apple someday, we think we'll join the crowd. But from a public safety perspective alone, when you have the head of the Federal Emergency Management Association, FEMA, saying we ought to activate the chips because in an emergency, you want to have that broadcast platform delivering local
content. Absolutely. Cell towers could go down, but the radio stations don't. And I, as a broadcaster, worked the San Francisco earthquake in 89, and that's where people went. That was what you had.
And Hurricane Sandy was another example of that. Katrina. It was the broadcaster who's going to be giving the lifeline emergency information that can actually save lives. So I think we'll get there.
How does radio feel about the future? Are they bullish?
I think so. Yeah, we've got Next Radio app, which is allowing interactive and mobility and selling opportunities with record labels. And so, I think radio is also evolving, just as and keeping the dashboard experience relevant to radio stations. So, radio's in good shape. TV
good, because I have a radio show, and if you could please just keep radio alive for a little longer. No, what's nice, and I think radio has totally made this transition. I work for Premier, which is iHeartRadio.
Right.
Totally understood the transition to digital, and it's hand in hand. They go hand in hand.
800 stations on the iHeart platform
sort
of demonstrates the value of radio moving to new platforms.
We just want to be wherever our audience is.
That's exactly right. Couldn't say it better myself.
Dennis, great to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for two decades of great stewardship. And as a broadcaster, I'm very grateful at the end.
We're happy to have you here. Welcome. Yeah. Enjoy the show.
And a lot of fun. What a great trade show. Thank you. That's Dennis Wharton. He's the Executive Vice President of Communications for the National Association of Broadcasters. And I think it's good that he mentioned that's what they do, is they represent broadcasters in D.C. And I know some of you might think that the agenda broadcasters have is at odds, perhaps, with the digital agenda. I don't think so.
And I think what we're starting to see is, the traditional broadcast media, especially radio media, has been squeezed. There's far more competition for people's attention. But now that the great culling is kind of coming to an end, we're seeing the players who are still here are far stronger, and they've refound their niches.
Yeah. This is nothing new. I remember very well when I started working radio in San Francisco, being told there are 70 stations in San Francisco, only 5 of them make money. And that was 20 years ago. It's not unusual. This has always been this way. Anybody who buys a radio station license knows it's a risky business. It's hard to make money in that business. In fact, that's why, unfortunately, deregulation happened, and a few companies own all the stations now.
And yet, it's interesting to note that radio loyalty, especially for commuters, is fierce.
Yeah.
I mean, it's way more than you get from television or an online property. People say, hey, 7:40 a.m. That's my drive time radio.
Right.
Or I only listen to NPR, or I only listen to KFI. And it becomes habit. They do that for years and years and years. Most of the other parts of the industry would kill to have that kind of brand loyalty.
Yeah, we talk always about what a great audience Twit generates. But it is a fraction of the radio station audience I have. Every weekend, 1 million people listen on the weekend. Sometimes I forget that, because I have such a direct connection with our internet audience through the chat room and email and Twitter. And it's a very direct connection. You almost in some ways feel like that's the bigger audience.
Right.
It's not. There's a large kind of uninvolved audience that listens on the radio. They don't tweet at you, they don't chat at you, but they're very much there, and I have to always remind myself.
By the way, I didn't realize you worked the 89 earthquake.
Oh, yeah.
So you were in San Francisco
KNBR. I was at KNBR, and I was actually at the World Series game when it happened.
So you were on the air when it happened.
Yeah, well, not when it happened. I wasn't broadcasting the World Series game. I was there as a fan. I was the president of the Giants fan club, so I had to go.
Of course.
But fortunately, I had brought a buddy who was a San Francisco native and knew the back roads. As soon as that happened, we waited a little bit, and I said, Norman, you got to get me to the station. This is what's great about radio, and I think there's still that sense in television somewhat, but definitely in radio, you got to get me to the station. News is breaking.
Right.
And so I immediately went in, as did everybody who worked at KNBR, which was a big, at that time, now it's a sports station, but at that time it was what we call a full-service station. It was the community station. And we went in and we broadcast, nonstop for a day or two, because, at the time, nobody was on cell, but even had they been, those towers would have been down, that would have been out. An AM radio is often a disaster, the only lifeline people have. And I should mention hams, too, because we have a lot of amateur radio people here, that hams become that same thing. Analog radio survives when a lot of other things fall off the map. And so hams are very good at transmitting information. We work closely with local hams, the local emergency response folks to bring that information to people over broadcast. So it's really important.
It's important. Well, when the Loma Prieta earthquake happened, that was drive time. That was commute time. Yeah. So you had all these people who were trapped in their cars wondering why nothing was moving. And the only thing they could get was the radio.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I don't want to say it was fun, because it
interesting time.
Disasters are not fun. Yeah. But I'll just tell you, just between us kids, that's what broadcasters live for, is those times when they can really be of service and jump in.
How did that work? So you were in your broadcast booth, and all the updates are just coming.
That's what's happening.
They're
handing you sheets of paper. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what's happening. They're on the phones as best they can. They're talking with hams as best they can. They're getting the information. And then we're disseminating it. And, of course, there's a real challenge, because you don't want to give out bad information.
Wrong line, exactly.
And that's really, I think, where I cut my teeth on really kind of vetting in my head something that I was about to say. I really work hard, and we still do that. You know, there's our industry now, because of the Internet and bloggers, is filled with misinformation. And it's very easy to jump on that story. And then, so my sense of skepticism comes from those broadcast days when you really had to think about what you were going to say.
And I think actually that's healthy, because like you, the first thing I'll do if there's a disaster is I'll jump on Twitter, mm-hmm. because I'll check the feed.
Oh yeah, that's reliable.
And 90% is it's not, people aren't lying. It's this is what they see, but they see a tiny little report.
Right.
I want to see a report from everything.
I think there's a skill set that thank goodness is still needed in this very democratic media. There still is a skill set that is important, the curation skill set, the ability to say, this is true, this is good, this is right, this you shouldn't pay too much attention to. And it's great to have all the raw material. I mean, had we in 1989 had Twitter, it would have been a lot easier to do our job, but it would still have been very important to vet that information.
And I think that vetting part is missing from a lot of new media. It's not vetting.
It's
I don't care
chamber.
If I'm right.
Yeah.
I just got to be
first. I
want
to be first, yeah. It's an echo chamber. Now I'm sounding like an old man.
Get off my lawn!
Hey, we have a great triangulation coming up. I'm going to let you wander around and find some good stuff, okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, Father Robert Ballasaire, the Digital Jesuit. He'll be back. We have lots more coverage of NAB. In fact, let's see. We're going to do triangulation. Then about 1 o'clock, we're going to do iOS Today, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC. And then right after iOS Today, I'm thinking around 4 o'clock, we'll have TNT, and we have lots of guests coming by. Actually, TNT, it looks like, has been, it's at 4 o'clock, we'll have lots of guests coming by. In between iOS Today and TNT, if you and I can spend some time here,
we've got
some guests coming by, including some things you saw at Showstoppers last night. Thank you, Father Robert, the Digital Jesuit. We're going to reset and get ready, because it's time for triangulation. Our signature interview show that we do. And boy, do we have a great guest, and I can see him out there right now. He is the supervising sound editor at Skywalker Ranch, which is... Have you ever been to Skywalker Ranch?
I have only thought about it in my dreams.
I went once. It was a remarkable experience. And you do feel like you're entering Valhalla when the gates swing open. It's the ranch that George Lucas built with the Star Wars money, and they have one of the last symphonic halls there that you can record symphony orchestra. And that's why I was there, because a friend of the network, a fan, is a musical director, and he said, Leo, would you like to come watch us record the soundtrack for, it was a Sony PS4 game, PS3 game. It was Uncharted.
Uncharted.
That's it.
Yes.
Something. Uncharted 3, I think it was. It was 2 or 3. And a beautiful symphonic score. They really have great music. I mean, this is movie music. And I got to sit there in that hall and watch it, and watch the big board, and listen to those amazing Rebel speakers they have in the control room. That was a lot of fun. So I'll never forget that. Someday I hope to get invited back. And I'm sorry that I took that ashtray. I promise, if you invite
me
back.
Sorry.
I think it's awesome ashtray. Yeah. Our Twit Live special here at the National Association of Broadcasters show, the NAB show, is brought to you, as are all our specials, by our good friends at Braintree. I love Braintree. And you know what? You may not know what they are, but you love Braintree too. If you've ever used Uber or Lyft or Airbnb or GitHub, you have used Braintree. Braintree brings mobile payments in a full-stack payment solution to any app, to any website, easily, effectively, fast payouts, totally secure, and it lets you, as a developer, include any kind of payment that your users want. I mean everything from from pounds to PayPal, credit cards, of course. You get Bitcoin. You get Apple Pay. You get Android Pay. All this stuff that you would love to have in your app, right, that your users demand, is in there with a simple integration. It's about 10 lines of code. And it doesn't matter what you're writing for, Android, iOS, JavaScript, that's why you can do it on the web, .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby, they support it all. All kinds of currency. The code is elegant, clearly documented, easy to install. In fact, why don't you go right now to BraintreePayments.com/twit, play around in the sandbox. You could see what it would be like to be using Braintree in your app. BraintreePayments.com/twit. And you know what? When a new way to pay comes along next year, you're sitting pretty. You could tell your manager, hey, no, we got this covered, because you just open your Braintree control panel, you check a box, you rebuild, and you're done. You resubmit, and you're in the store, and now you're taking Leo Pay or whatever. BraintreePayments.com/twit. I want you to try it out. And one of the nice things they do for your first $50,000 of transactions, that's totally fee-free. BraintreePayments.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. We are back live at NAB, the NAB show in Las Vegas, Nevada. 100,000, actually 20,000 broadcasters, 80,000 wannabe broadcasters or IP broadcasters, and 1,700 exhibitors. And it is really mind-boggling to see how over the years it has changed. This, we're in the Central Hall, which is ostensibly kind of like the big boys' hall. But I just took a walk around, and really is the drone hall. There's nothing but drones everywhere. It is amazing. Joining me right now, Barry Owen. He's VP Engineering at Wowza Media Systems. Wowza is Wowza. It's very cool.
You have to smile when you say it.
It's a big technology for people who do what I do, IP streaming. Tell us about Wowza.
Wowza's been around actually a little over 10 years now.
Yeah.
I believe that. Started by Charlie and Dave, and you know, all things streaming. It's really become the go-to for varying formats, AVR streaming. We can take anything out in, we can send anything
it's
out.
It's kind of like correct me if I'm saying this wrong, cloud-based encoder server,
so
sort of.
We offer installable software, and we offer a cloud service.
Oh, so it's not just cloud.
No, we hit all markets, and we even have a couple little encoder apps.
That I could run on a Mac or a PC, or what would I run it on?
On a phone, actually.
On a phone? No.
One of our announcements for this show was we produced a phone app that allows you to stream to Wowza servers, and now we're releasing an SDK, so anybody who wants to embed that in their own app.
Oh, that's cool.
Can grab our SDK, and then they too can be a Periscope competitor.
So we should explain what this solution is, middleware solution.
Yeah, I mean, I often refer to Wowza as plumbing.
Yeah, when your mom asks you, so Barry, tell me what you do again.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Yeah, so I mean, What we like to say is, you know, Wowza sits in the middle of the IP streaming workflow.
Yeah.
You know, we work with tons of encoder vendors, and we work with tons of CDNs, output players.
People like Ustream and Bitgravity.
And Akamai.
Akamai.
You know, a JW player. We certainly work with LiveView on integration of their uploads into our system. So we sit in the middle. We're highly customizable. We're highly configurable. People build their solutions. We have a complete API for both the engine and the cloud. And you can really modify and configure the software to do exactly what you need to do at any point in time.
Colleen Kelly always said to me, you're killing me here. Get a Wowza server. We got to get a Wowza server. I don't think we ever did get a Wowza server. I kind of regret that now.
Sorry to hear that. You can get Wowza cloud now. It's really easy.
Yeah, we really should have. But it would have solved a lot of issues. I mean, we were talking before we began about the old Streamasaurus, where we had all these Mac Minis, and we would feed them from the TriCaster, and then they
Absolutely.
Would encode it using the Flash encoder, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And then that would upload it to Ustream, and actually we had so many because we were different endpoints we would upload to, not just Ustream, and we'd have different quality that we'd upload. You know, Ustream high, low, medium. It was really
Now we can do that all in one box.
It's so much easier.
I have a little gigabyte bricks computer that's, you know, about 5x5,
yeah,
an i7 in it. We took a 4K stream into that thing, and we can send out 6 renditions anywhere we want.
That's kind of amazing. So that would do exactly what Streamasaurus did.
Absolutely.
But so much less expensive and so much simpler.
Oh, yeah, and all with...
yeah, really worked the mic on this. Yeah, sorry.
all with, you know, very cheap hardware, right. and you know, you could take an encoder such as, you know, any old camera and a live view encoder, send it to this box.
Right. Nope, we don't use Flash anymore, do we? Flash Media Encoder, are we still using that?
We use it when we test stuff, but that's about it. Not in real life.
That was really the only way to do it. In fact, the first TriCaster had that built in.
Yeah, and they've actually switched out to something else.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're FFmpeg-based or something else. But, you know, we have a lot of customers using Wirecast. That's certainly very popular. We have an awful lot of customers using TriCasters.
Yeah.
They're a good partner.
Is Flash dying finally in the streaming video?
Certainly seems like it. I mean, with the advent of the HTML5 browsers that all actually finally seem to work.
You're agnostic, right? You could output it.
Yeah, we don't care. I mean, we certainly will output RTMP, we'll output HLS, we'll output Dash,
right?
Even HDS. But
right. Is there a winner in this market yet?
Well, HLS and Dash seem to be winning.
Right.
I mean, obviously,
Apple uses HLS.
HLS for all the iOS devices, so it's gotten this super strong foothold.
Yeah, because they didn't, because they would never use Flash. They had to come up with some alternative. And we actually have to pay for a dedicated HLS server because we want to make sure we have an HLS stream for our iOS.
Got to have an HLS stream. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the price of admission now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dash is coming on the other side.
What is Dash? I'm not familiar with that.
So MPEG Dash, an alternate format, similar. It's an HTTP delivery format, similar to HLS. A more open standard than HLS. It's not controlled by Apple. It's controlled by
not MPEG LA either.
No. So there's no, I mean, that's
completely unencumbered. Yeah. You can never say that. That's the funny thing. It's always somebody's got
to pay. But it's gaining a lot of support. There's some really good Dash players out there. Bitmovin makes a real nice Dash player.
Because our user, I mean, I hate Flash, obviously. I talk a lot about it. I applaud Apple for getting rid of it. But then our users, when they go to our website and we have JW Player, half the time they're seeing Flash and saying, Leo, what are you doing? You're streaming Flash. We have to, because most people, that's all you can get.
The legacy browsers, and, you know, there's so many of them out there still using IE8 or whatever, where you don't get the extensions to have a pure HTML5 experience. Although it's getting better and better every day.
And, of course, YouTube now is moving away finally from Flash. It's almost all HTML5, I think.
We're actually demoing a YouTube in our booth where we're doing VP9 over WebM and Dash into YouTube.
Nice.
So YouTube would love to switch off of H.264.
Which is encumbered. VP9. That's the MPEG LA codec. VP9 is the one that they kind of said, well, we'll stand by this not being patent-free and royalty-free.
And the preferred format for that one is WebM and Dash.
Right. And how do you like VP9? Does it look good? Does it scale well?
It seems to. It seems to encode nicely. It's good quality.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where all that goes. I mean, there's a constant, you know, H.264 is obviously the far and away the market leader, but more and more stuff with 265.
People are reluctant because MPEG LA, which owns the codec or regulates the codec, it's really a group of people.
Right.
Has said we aren't going to charge, but could charge.
I think there's a lot of FUD going around with H.265 right now because of what might happen and who might assert
it. What might happen is the issue. Who might assert it? Google? No.
No.
We don't know who has.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Somebody's going to come out of the woodwork.
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty, and that makes people nervous, obviously.
Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about Wowza. It's agnostic.
Right?
You don't care.
We don't care, and we offer many, many different things. So, I mean, we can do 264, we can do 265, we can do VP8, we can do VP9. You know, so whatever works for
you. In fact, you can do all of the above at the same time.
We can take in a stream and transcode it into all of those things at once.
That's really nice. That really is the best way to do it. And we have a lot of very expensive hardware from a company whose name I shall not repeat. But it cost us a packet to do this, and really, it's software.
Right. At the end of the day, it's all software.
It's software and can be run on commodity PCs like the one you just described.
It can, and the access to GPU acceleration is just getting better.
Is that
and
what's
better.
Changed? Is the GPUs?
It's part of it. So Intel QuickSync is performing very well now. Yeah. NVIDIA NVENC chips perform very well, and even in the cloud now, finally with the Amazon G2 instances. You could get real comparable hardware performance in a cloud server used to be able to only get with dedicated hardware.
Isn't that amazing?
So when somebody figures out how to virtualize QuickSync, which is generally cheaper than the NVIDIA solution, that's going to be very interesting as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're working on it.
I'm sure somebody is.
Yeah. It's so nice to meet you, Barry. Thank you for
Absolutely,
coming
you
by.
You too. Anytime.
Things going well at Wowza Media Systems?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Growing, growing, growing.
If somebody wants to be an IPTV streamer, they should contact you.
Absolutely. And come see us in the South Hall.
Simplify their life. Don't do what Leo did. One of the problems of being a pioneer is you get a lot of arrows in your back.
I tell people between GoCoder and Wowza Cloud, they can be up and running with their own Periscope in about 5 minutes.
Isn't that amazing? So, yeah, yeah. It's mind-boggling. Yeah. It's great. Nice to
All
see
right.
you, Barry.
Thanks
you for
a lot.
Coming by. Barry
Good
Owen
time.
Is VP Engineering at Wowza Media Systems, where they're really kind of the back end for a lot of the IPTV streaming that you see. This is really... Lisa and I went by the NAB bookstore, and all you see is IPTV for dummies, IPTV, how to build an IP studio. It's clearly the future.
Absolutely.
And I was just talking to two broadcast engineers from big LA TV stations. I won't name any names. Who said, we hate it? I said, but they're making you do it, aren't they? They said, yeah. But our concern is, and this is interesting, this is really old school, but I love it. What happens if there's an earthquake? And it's not, our infrastructure might survive, but all the consumer infrastructure that allows them to watch these
Fair
signals,
enough. For sure,
the cell towers, the internet, it's all going to die. And they're going to wish they had a broadcast signal they could turn their AM radio to, right? So they
Absolutely.
Could find out what was going on.
You make a good point.
Yeah. Well, these, you know what? These old guys have been around. They know this stuff. They've been through a few earthquakes. Anyway, nice to see you. Thank you.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Yeah. We are live from NAB in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. We're at the LVCC, the Las Vegas Convention Center, where NAB consumes all three of the big halls. We're in the Central Hall, which is... unofficially the Hall of Drones. Amazing stuff. In just a bit we're going to talk about unmanned flying vehicles being used for some pretty serious hardcore video. There you see, if you're watching the video, the show floor from our Panasonic. There's Jammer B, John Slunny, from our amazing Panasonic PTZ pan tilt zoom cameras that Brian Burnett, our technical director, is controlling via his iPad. You can even pinch and zoom. Oh, the TriCaster's doing that? So you can do it with the TriCaster too? Oh. Are you using a joystick? Oh, man, that's cheating. You got to use an iPhone. Do it like the other guys do. So you're getting the experience. We never were able to do this before. I love these PTZs. And this is the same chip that Panasonic's using in the stick. The stick cameras, the tripod cameras we're using for the set. So what's nice is everything matches. Pretty impressive. And joining us now from FlyMotion. Hi, Ryan. Ryan English. He's president and co-founder of FlyMotion Unmanned Systems. How'd you come about doing this?
So what we did is we saw basically a need for drone technology. So myself and my business partner started a company.
For movies, for TV?
Yeah. We're in a lot of different vertical markets: media broadcast, public safety, oil and gas.
Oh, interesting.
Energy.
But this is not your grandfather's drone. This is.
No.
These are kind of. In fact, I don't know if we can PTZ over to. They're right next to us over here. But these are drones capable of carrying fairly hefty gear, right?
Yeah. So we deal with a variety of different aerial systems, everything from quadcopters up to octocopters, and even some fixed wing platforms.
Oh, really? Wow.
And you know, one of the things about our company, FlyMotion Unmanned Systems, is we've basically, as you see, our vehicle over here is Maverick. So that's our Maverick series platform. And what we've done is we've taken drone technology to the next level and basically built out a mobile drone command and control vehicle. For drone operations.
So you'll go out in that Maverick, and it looks like you've got, what is it on top of it? Is it a microwave antenna?
Yes. Yeah. So that's a what we've done is we've obviously seen a need for both manned aviation using the helicopter microwave downlinks and an unmanned aviation.
Oh, so this is a downlink.
Correct. Yeah. So microwave downlink on there, we can simultaneously feed into three helicopters up to about 40 miles away.
Wow. Wow. Or drones.
Yes, correct. We've got two in this Maverick series. We've got two drone flight stations that you basically plug right in and run the whole operation. And then one of the things that we do is we stream live using LiveView's system, we can actually stream the feeds live anywhere in the world.
What is this we're looking at? Is that another? Is that one of your drones there?
That's a DJI product. That is one of the products.
It's a Phantom.
That is the Inspire.
Inspire, okay.
Yep, Inspire 1. That's a fairly popular platform that some of our clients like to use.
But they can live stream from that.
Yes. Yeah, so typically what they would do is, for example, they would basically bring, it's got an HDMI out on the controller, on the ground control station. They would feed that into LiveView, for example, and stream live right from it.
So from now on, when there's a car chase in L.A., we're not going to be watching it from... We might be watching from a drone and a chase vehicle running down the highway.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that you'll see. You'll still see a need for manned aviation, but obviously the drones can get into places that helicopters traditionally cannot.
Right.
And you know, it's a great add-on item to manned aviation that we're, you know,
Where are you based?
We're based in Tampa, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So tell me a few of your customers. It sounds like it's not just motion pictures and television. Law enforcement.
The biggest two vertical markets that we're predominantly in is public safety, consisting of law enforcement, fire rescue, even some governmental stuff, and then.
Are you making spy drones?
not particular spy stuff, but just some different
surveillance.
Surveillance applications. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we work with governments internationally. In that respect, and so that's one of the things that's you know, we found is obviously drone technology is it's a lot of people think it's going to be spying on you, but there's a tremendous amount of very beneficial, useful applications for drone technology. And one of the things that, you know, we've done, all of us with the company have either military or you know, public safety, mostly law enforcement, special operations background. So we've taken our boots on the ground approach and our operational experience and implemented that into our company kind of principles and the products that we're developing.
Colleen said you were in the Coast Guard.
I was.
You were at Two Rock?
I was over in Petaluma for a bit. Yeah.
Local boy? That's nice. That's great.
About 3 months out there.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's a great training facility.
It is. Yeah. Very, very nice place. Yeah. I enjoyed the weekend trips to San Francisco and Bodega Bay.
So that's interesting. So you, because of your relationships with military and law enforcement, because of your experience with military and law enforcement, you can talk the talk, walk the walk, and you know what they need. What are they looking for? Is it reliability? Is it visual acuity? What's most important to them?
Predominantly, especially in that realm that we've seen, is they want to get eyes on a scene or a scenario,
right.
And rapidly.
Right.
So obviously, you know.
So rapid deployment's big.
Yeah. Rapid deployment is one of the biggest things that we've seen a need for. Reliability, extended flight times.
Right.
You know, some of the systems we deal with have up to 50-minute flight times, and weather resistant, things like that. So that's important when they're looking at drone technology.
If there's a fire, you want to get out there and see what's going on. You don't want
thermal
to put
imaging.
People thermal imaging. You don't want to put people in harm's way. You want to be able to investigate a scene without having to send people out there.
Sure.
I think that's great. Yeah, and you could do it, I imagine, pretty surreptitiously too.
Yes. Yeah. Most definitely. And I mean, you know, the big thing that, you know, we've shown a lot of agencies and even, you know, private organizations that we're dealing with is the cost benefit of drone technology.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to, you know, of course, obviously, as I mentioned, manned aviation is, you know, helicopters and planes are a great asset, but unfortunately, you know, every department can't afford those, or every news organization, but drone technology is very cost effective, and they can implement drone technology into their operations for, you know, not a lot of money and be able to get an aerial perspective that they previously could never have.
It's interesting that you're using even things like I shouldn't call it consumer grade, but DJI is something a consumer could use.
Yeah, sure.
So you're even using those as well.
Yes.
Yeah, not specially built, but just off the shelf drones.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, you know, depending on the agency or the organization that we're dealing with, you know, sometimes obviously cost is a big concern for them.
Right.
And you know, there's some tremendous systems out there that, you know, are well into the six figures, but unfortunately, not everybody can afford those. So the DJI platforms and such are great for, you know, some of the lower cost you know, consumers that need to utilize something like that, that need to get drone technology but maybe can't afford, you know,
there's always budget crunch
yeah.
constant.
Oh, yeah.
Do you train as well, or do you provide operators? How do you do that?
We do. So we are involved in the training side, and one of the things that, you know, and then consulting as well. So a lot of companies and organizations will contact us that maybe want to implement a drone program
right.
into their operations. And we work with them to take that from, you know, A to Z and get them up and operational through the FAA processes if they're here in the U.S. and then getting them through the training process to get them operating their own systems internally.
Yeah, I've learned it's anybody can own a drone. Flying one is another
yeah.
matter entirely. And I've yet to. I have a couple of bent up drones that I keep flying in the hillsides.
Yes.
But I suppose, you know, with a little training. Even I could probably learn.
It is. It is. You know. Obviously, the systems have a lot of technology in them.
Yeah, they're GPS amazing, and, aren't they? Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, fail safe modes and stuff like that. But yeah, you definitely always want to know how to fly them manually, just in case
right.
something does fail.
How has the FAA regulation changed this?
It's actually the FAA. I just recently got back traveling, sitting on a couple panels with the FAA, and one of the things that. We found as a company, especially in the commercial space, is the FAA has been pretty good as far as the regulations that are coming down and clarifying. You know, one of the things that we first saw when the regulations came into place was it wasn't very clearly defined.
Right.
There was a lot of confusion.
Who's commercial, who's not.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now what we're seeing is the things outlined as far as what you can and can't do. Commercial under the Section 333, hobby rec under 336. And you know, the public COAs if need be, and things like that. And so we're pretty happy with it, where everything's going, and based on the proposed regulations that we're seeing, we're excited too.
Yeah, there's been some concern about public safety concerns about unlicensed drones blocking firefighters that happened in L.A. Not so long
yes.
ago, and getting in the way of investigations. So clearly, there's some regulation was needed, and certainly you don't want drones flying into airports and. Causing problems there.
Oh yeah, yeah, most definitely. And I think, you know, the biggest thing to that is just education and educating the people, you know, how to operate responsibly.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, it's like everything, and it's sometimes difficult to regulate everybody, but, you know, putting it out there and educating the people as best that you can.
When something gets really affordable, then everybody starts getting it, and then
yes.
you gotta worry about it. Well, it's
right.
nice to meet you, Ryan.
No,
I was very impressed. I was looking over here and saying, wow, I don't know what these guys are doing, but it's pretty cool. Have you flown a drone inside here yet?
Not inside.
Are you
no.
allowed to?
We would if we had a cage over here.
Okay, yeah, because there's a lot of drone activity, but
yeah.
they're all in cages. Okay,
yes,
good.
Correct. Yeah,
as
for safety precautions
yeah.
with all the people.
Here's our... Father Robert Ballester is here. We call him the drone father. He is actually quite an accomplished drone pilot. Robert, if you ever need a job, I can hook you up here, because they do training... for law enforcement, for firefighters, for business, motion pictures, television. Yeah. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
No,
really
thank
appreciate
you.
It. President
Great
co-founder
of
Fly Motion Unmanned Systems. You're obviously in a growth market.
Thanks. Appreciate
going up,
your time.
Up. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it. We are live at NAB. Father Robert, this is the drone hall, isn't it? I hadn't been able to walk around much. Until after I finished iOS Today, I thought this was going to be, as it has been in the past, kind of a more, kind of the big companies. But I see nothing but drone manufacturers everywhere.
Yeah, it's because you can get shots with a drone that used to cost you a $50,000 helicopter rental or a $10,000 mm-hmm. crane rental. And they're going beyond just photography. Now they've got drones that will lift your lights.
Yeah.
They have a drone that is your broadcast tower. So it goes up, it's tethered, it stays in the air for hours at a time,
wow.
and that becomes
that's
the way you transmit.
That's your mast.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Have you found any new cool stuff you're going to bring by?
Oh, yeah. We found a few things that you're going to like maybe a new monster lens for the Sony A7R II.
I didn't realize it, but the Leica booth is right behind us.
Don't go, Leo.
No, I can't go near
Don't.
Them. I can't go anywhere near them. Well, have fun. We got lots more to come from NAB in about 45 minutes. We're going to do to TNT. Actually, less than that. Half an hour we're going to TNT. And then I'm sneaking off. And maybe if you want to join me, because we saw one of our good friends, Mark from T2. He's, of course, one of our advertisers there, the great Macintosh folks in New York City. And he's arranged for me to go over and see the new HP copper laptop, what is it called? The Spectre 360X or whatever, and I'm very excited about that. So I'm going to be running at 4 o'clock to go over and see that, and then running to a plane. Cheryl Jennison DeProsa is joining us from Shure. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm good.
Wait a minute. I have to show you my purse.
Yes, let's see it.
Inside my... Well, that was very enthusiastic.
I'm a fan of purses.
Well, this is my man purse, but, you know, one of the reasons I started carrying a purse is so that I can put stuff that I might need at any moment, any possible moment, in my purse. And, of course, I have, as you can see, an iPad, but also I have with the iPad... Oh, I have all sorts of stuff. I have a little light, and I have... Have you ever seen this before? The Shure MV88. I love this microphone. I've been flogging this to everybody everywhere I go. This is a microphone with a lightning connector that you can use on an iPhone.
Yep.
And I've actually recorded radio commercials under the covers in a hotel with this.
I won't tell anybody.
Please don't. It's top secret. It's so nice to meet you. I've used Shure microphones for years. We always recommend the Shure SM58, the punk club microphone of choice.
It's actually 50 years old this year.
Is it?
Yes. This
wow.
is the 50th anniversary of the SM58.
That thing, you cannot kill that thing. You can hammer nails with that thing, it sounds great.
Yep. I actually have one that belonged to my mother that is about 30 years old.
Wait a minute. You come from a long line of microphonists?
I do indeed.
What did your mother do?
She was just a singer. She was in a gospel band for a brief amount of time. And
she used the Shure.
She had it. And when I got into doing bands, she passed it on to me, and I still use it. And yes. All dented up, but it works great. Works like a champ.
I'll never forget seeing Letterman before he retired. Mm-hmm. He did his warm-up with a Shure SM58 on a very long cable, and he would swing it around. He would hit the stage with it. That thing had dents in the wind shoots, the microphone foil.
The windscreen. Mm-hmm.
Windscreen, and it took a lick and it kept on ticking.
I actually believe that was donated
to
our archives.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, we had it at NAMM this year. We had it in our SM58 Wall of Fame. So, yes, we have that one. We have one that Roger Daltrey from The Who used.
Oh, nice.
It's one, you know, he always, you know, would swing
the mic around.
He would
swing his around too, yeah.
And he would always kind of pull the cord up really tight and tape it. And the one that we have was one that he had that failed on him. And it was one of very few that ever failed. And we said, oh, my goodness, you know, send it to us. You know, and of course, we sent him a new one. And we got it back, and we took it to our service department, and they looked at it, and they're like, the mic's fine. You did the cable too tight, so.
It's your fault.
It's, yes, yes.
So you're a singer.
I am indeed.
Is that how you got into Shure?
A little bit, yeah. It was sort of a strange, twisted web. But, yeah, I was in a band and was working another day job, you know, just doing office work. And we had a sub-saxophone player who's one of the acoustic engineers at the company, and... We were talking about Shure, and it came up that he knew that there was something that was going to open up soon, and I said, I want that job, and
legendary.
I was very lucky to get
legendary.
It. Legendary. Yeah.
So what do you do at Shure?
I'm a media relations specialist.
Well, you're doing it right now.
I am, yes. This is what they pay me the big bucks for, as I always say. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I started in the customer service department and worked there for a couple of years, and then made the move into public relations, and I love talking about Shure because I love the products and I believe in them.
And so. I'm loving this motif line. I think this
is
really interesting. So you brought the MV88, which is what I use. This is stereo capsules, right?
Yes,
condenser mic.
It's a stereo, condenser microphone, and it works on any iPhone, iPad, iPod, anything with a lightning connector. But the really great thing is that the Motive app that comes with it, it's a free app in the iTunes store, and it really unlocks a lot of different features of the microphone. So you can go in here.
You can show this backwards because you can see that shot down there. There's a camera over your shoulder.
There it is.
Hey,
look at that. You're making my life easy.
Yeah.
So it's really nice. You can make it as simple or as complex as you want. There are 5 presets here. You know, you've got your speech, your singing, your flat, acoustic, and loud. You can adjust your mic gain. You can adjust your stereo width. Or if you really want to get complex, you pull it down and you've got a limiter, a compressor. You've got all sorts of things. You've got an equalizer in here. And you can really just sort of dial in whatever you want it to be. This thing really shines in loud applications if you want to record something at a concert.
That's important because your phone microphone does not.
Exactly.
It will completely distort almost instantly.
Exactly. And this thing works really well at high SPL levels. I mean, that's really where we see it really do its job and really shine. We have some fabulous footage of some of our artists. We put them up on our Twitter feed from time to time of just great sounding things. It's really quite amazing, you know, what you can do on your phone now and with the
MV88.
Yeah, it gets you great audio quality.
So I'll tell you what I do. That the Motive application allows you to save to Dropbox, which I've set up.
Correct.
So it automatically I record it using my SM88. I record it to the application. It'll save. I can actually trim it a little bit, save it out to Dropbox, and then I have an if this then that script that takes it says, oh, there's something new on Dropbox, and shares it up to SoundCloud and makes it public. So I can actually literally record an audio podcast using your Motive app and the Shure mic and have it posted within minutes. It really could not be easier. It's really great.
We're really happy that it's working well for you.
Yeah.
It's also nice because if you don't want to use the Motive recording app, say you're doing something in GarageBand.
Yeah, I can use anything.
Or even
I
your
set it up
app.
With Motive, and then it keeps those settings, which is nice. It's storing them in the mic.
Exactly. The DSP engine for this mic is actually on the mic itself. So everything that you're doing here is saved to the mic. So you can close it down, and you can open up your video app. You can open up GarageBand.
And it still remembers the settings.
And it's going to do everything
awesome.
That you need it to do.
So I really like that.
It's really a nice mic.
So that's interesting. So what it's doing is there's a DSP in the microphone itself. So what it's sending through Lightning is already processed. It's the final version of it that all the phone just takes it and records it.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
A clever way to do it.
And you can monitor in real time with your headphones. So, you know, it's really easy. You just plug in your headphones. You make sure that setting is switched on and you can hear what you're recording.
Now, I also bought, and I see you brought it with you, this old-fashioned mic. I love how this looks. I mean, your mom could have used this, right?
She could have, yeah. I think she would have
used
this.
Is that a great microphone?
Yeah, this is the MV51. Go ahead.
This has on the front, it has settings. So all the settings you just saw in the application, you can also do from the front on this mic.
Correct, yes. All the simple applications are right here, those same five DSP. Yeah. You also have your mic gain. This cap touch panel is really easy to use. You can toggle between your headphone volume or your mic gain. You can also mute the mic. This also does work with that Motive app. So if you do want to get into the EQ and the compressor and limiter,
you
can access it through your iOS.
And this has a headphone jack, right?
It
so
does.
I can monitor. And this is really important because you can't really monitor through the phone. You're going to tilt that a little bit. There we go. You can't monitor through the phone because there's latency. But if you monitor through the microphone, you hear it in real time.
Exactly.
That is really handy. And I also use this on my computer because it can hook up a USB cable, and now it's a USB mic.
Yeah, this mic will work well with iOS, with Android. It will work with PC, you know.
How is this mic different, say, from the MV88? I've wondered.
Well, the MV88 is a stereo microphone, and this is a mono microphone. Yeah.
Is it a bigger diaphragm?
Yes, this is a large diaphragm because of the larger.
You can do that.
Yep,
I like large diaphragms. I've always been a fan of a larger diaphragm mic.
And if you hold it, it's super weighty. I mean, it's got some heft to it.
It feels like I should be playing the harmonica or something.
Yeah.
It's got that. It's such a nice retro styling. I really loved that when I saw it, and I didn't need it because I already had the MV88, but I had to buy the 51 because this is cool.
It was actually designed to mimic the Model 51 microphone. So there was actually a microphone. It was an old square microphone that looked a lot like this.
Right.
We have a brand new industrial design team, and Motive was one of their first projects, one of the first couple of projects they did. So they really came through. And then just one other feature people don't realize is this screws off right here, and it'll mount on any standard microphone stand.
So you could put it on a mic stand, which is really nice.
Yep, exactly.
And it's got the thread for it. I love that.
Yep. So
how much is that one?
This is $299. That's what you're.
And the MV88.
The MV88 is $149.
$149.
Yep.
That's actually an amazing price for a really good mic, $149. But I have to say, I had to buy this because I just love how it looks. Now you've added another mic to the Motive line.
We do have a couple of other things in the Motive line. This is the MV5. This is the small diaphragm. So the MV51 is kind of the granddaddy of the family.
This is kind of the podcaster mic, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah. As opposed to the three settings that we have on the others, the five settings, there's three on here. So there's a speech setting, a music setting, and a flat setting.
So you could use it to record your acoustic guitar or your violin solo or something like
definitely,
that.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. And it unscrews from the top there, so if you want to throw it in your bag, you certainly can. It just.
Well, see, that's why I like the MV88, because I really carry that with me everywhere I go. It's really great.
Yep. This one comes off of the desk stand, and it also comes in gray, so you can get the black and red, or you can get the gray. Also, the real-time headphone monitoring, so you don't have to worry about your latency issues.
That's really
great. You can control the volume here. It's all just in a small little package.
And I've seen this on the site, but I haven't seen this other. What is this new one?
This right here? So if you're a fan of the MV51, this is going to look sort of familiar. It's got the same touch panel.
Yeah.
It's got the same settings, but it's not a microphone. It's an interface.
Got it. So this would be your USB interface for a standard mic.
Exactly.
Oh, there you go. There's the XLR connector. John's going crazy. We use these all the time. We send them out in kits. We sent out the Heil PR 40 because we want a a dynamic mic for our broadcasters, and we have to send them an interface because they're going to hook it up to Skype on their computer. I think John has just found his new USB interface.
We hope so.
Yeah.
We hope so.
And that has the DSP built in as well.
Yes, it does. It has the same functionality. Once again, if you're going through iOS, you can get to the compressor and limiter and the EQ, but it has a combo jack. So you can either use your standard 3-pin XLR or a quarter-inch cable. So if you want to plug in a keyboard,
so that'll do double duty. That's
it'll
great.
Do either or, yeah.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
And the real
how
time
much is that?
This is also, I believe, $129.
Oh, John, this is it. This is our new interface.
There
right?
it is.
I think so.
I found it for you.
Yeah, we used to use. You had one that was microphone like a microphone.
The X2U.
X2U.
Yes,
that's it.
Yes, and we
recommended
do still
that.
Have. Yeah. We do still have the X2U. Yeah. The other nice thing about this that I forgot to mention is this will power phantom power. It will provide phantom power. So
you can use those condenser mics if you want.
If that's you're using it with your laptop, it'll pull the full 48. It's a little bit less if you're using it off your iPhone, just because we didn't want to drain your iPhone.
So, yeah.
But it will power a condenser microphone. Yep.
Really great stuff.
So that's the Motive Lab.
I'm thrilled because I've used Shure for a lifetime in radio and also just in the field with the SM58. But I love these new digital mics. They're really, really useful. And as you can see, I proved it because I have it with me at all times. I'm ready.
We're very happy and proud about that. That's for sure.
You just have to have a portable tent so I can record. I don't have to get under the covers to record my ads. I can just do it. Hey, it's very nice to meet you. Cheryl Jennison DeProza. She's with Shure. And this is fun stuff. Fun
Thank
new
you.
Microphones from Shure in the Motive. Motive.
Motive.
Mm-hmm. You don't like to say Motive. Motive line.
I like the Motive, but yeah, we pronounce
like
it Motive.
Motive. The Motive line. The Motive line. All right. Very nice to see you.
You can find all that information at Shure.com/Motive, M-O-T-I-V.
Yeah. We send people there a lot. I don't know if
you
know it, but I'm always talking about my MP3.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cheryl. Really appreciate it.
I do too.
We are live from NAB in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm on the show floor. Father Robert Ballasaire is our roving reporter, our digital Jesuit. He's sitting on a tuffet right now. We've had these specially manufactured tuffets in orange and white arranged carefully so that you can be seated during your long day at NAB.
That's one of the pro tips for doing shows like this. You never pass up an opportunity to sit.
Sit. And you're wearing your patented sandals, I notice.
I'm waiting for them to come back into style. Black socks with sandals.
Never.
I think, it's getting there.
This has been really fun. I have to say, I always worry about us covering it because I know this is something I'm interested in because I'm a broadcaster.
Yes.
But I think there's always enough fun consumer stuff to find that you can really have a great time. Really a great time.
We did come across something that I thought you might be interested in.
Yes.
We've seen those rail systems that can cost a couple of $1,000.
What do you mean rail systems?
So you put your camera on system and
like
it
takes... Like a dolly
or... Exactly. Yeah. And you can do time lapse or you can do those really smooth pan jump
shots. Like the slider. I love that. Yeah.
We found an automated one that has an app so you control everything from your iPad. And the unit was actually, $750?
Yeah.
And you could turn it into a sky cam. It's modular, so it can be a rail cam, a sky cam, a wall cam, up and down.
$750 is a good price.
Yeah, that's not bad.
We played a lot more, I think, for our slider.
Yeah, we did.
If you remember, if you've ever seen the House of Cards, at the very beginning, they had these wonderful time-lapse shots of Washington, D.C. at night and so forth. But what makes them fun is they're not just static time-lapses. They're also moving horizontally through the time-lapse, and that's how they do that, is with these very slow slider rails. They're great.
This, we could actually... Remember the action cam from the GizWiz?
Yeah.
So we could actually do that with lines across the studio, and it would just reposition across the ceiling.
The thrill cam is back, John.
Thrill cam.
Poor John. He was so glad to get rid of that thing. That's back, John. All right. Well, Robert, continue to go out there and find cool stuff, will you? Because we're having a lot of fun seeing toys. In about 20 minutes, TNT with Megan Maroney and Jason Howell, and we'll have not only the regular tech news, but some special NAB news. Joining me right now, Jim Godaldick. He is a cinematographer, but he's also with GoPro. He's the broadcast and photo marketing manager at GoPro.
Yes.
And look what you brought us.
I did. I brought Omni.
This is so cool. I wish I could afford it. How much? $8,000? Nope. $7,000?
Five.
All-inclusive
kit.
How many GoPros are in there?
Six Hero 4 Blacks.
So six Hero 4 Blacks, each with 4K video, right?
Correct.
and you're going to stitch them together into one 360-degree fully immersive action video.
Yeah, so all these cameras, basically we have one master camera. These are all Genlock together. So one master camera controls all the other five cameras in this. It doesn't do in-camera stitching, but because of our color AVP software, you basically would acquire your spherical images here and then be able to automate the data management and the stitching with the color, our color AVP software.
So you just import it to the computer, let the software run, and you got it.
Yeah. With it, you know, you're still, it's still a little bit more post-involved in terms of, you know, what we wind up with in effective is an 8K resolution spherical image.
Holy cow.
So we're talking full 360 by 180.
You can't really upload that to Facebook or YouTube yet.
You know what? The video we released, Save the Rhinos, was one of the first kind of...
was that shot with this?
Yes, it was.
Neat.
And that was one. That was the 6K.
It was 6K when you uploaded it.
Yeah,
you didn't have to downsell.
Yeah, so Facebook 360 has been doing a great job.
That's
of,
amazing.
Kind of pressing their technology.
That's amazing
for streaming.
You know, GoPro's been struggling a little bit lately, probably because there's a lot of competition in the action camera market. But what's exciting is this new 360 market.
Yeah.
And you're offering probably one of the lowest priced solutions. We were just playing with the Ozo, $60,000.
Yeah.
The Facebook camera that they showed the free plans for still would cost you $30,000 to $40,000 to build.
Yeah.
So something at $5,000 range, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, we're talking media, cameras, software license, power solution, yeah, accessories.
And great imaging from the GoPro.
Yes.
I mean,
that's kind of our staple has always been small form factor, high resolution imaging.
You must have fun because you work with the broadcasters doing this stuff. And it's, boy, is that a change, because for a long time, broadcasters would have never looked at a camera like this and said, we're going to put that on the air. Even though the quality is as good, if not better, than the you know, big pedestal cameras they spent $50,000 for.
Yeah.
But they're so resistant to something like this. But are they starting to adopt it?
Yeah, I think VR as a whole, or 360 video as a whole, has been, in the past 2 years, I would say, as we look at how much VR and 360 products are available today at NEB and have launched, there's a lot of competition out there. Competition is good.
Yeah.
But I, from the GoPro standpoint, we're really trying to solve the end-to-end, from capture through to distribution. So we've got everything from hardware to software stitching to actually iOS, Android, and even desktop platform apps available.
Is this also shot with the new camera?
So yeah, this is basically GoPro VR on the Moto Track with a VR with the 360 rig on the back of it. And what you can do is a click and drag experience right now through YouTube. But yeah, this allows you to see fully immersive capture and then use some of the metadata from our integration with the MotoGP team. Is you basically have those that little HUD up there that's giving you the data from the bike.
That is incredible. And by the way, incredible video quality. A lot of times, you know, I'll be honest, even the Ozo, the quality is not impressed because you just don't have the resolution. But when you are working with an 8K master, you really do. You have the quality there.
No, yeah, because pretty much every one of these is capable.
It's a full 4K camera, right?
Yeah, it's 4K camera. The optimal modes are just because our sensor size happens to be a 4x3 sensor. It was kind of that perfect de facto solution, because when you get more vertical height for that overlap on stitching, our cameras, because they're so small, you can couple them closer together. You want the sensors closer together in terms of a multi-camera solution.
Got it.
Because you have
Got
to
it.
Have the overlap when you stitch.
So there, how much overlap? How many degrees of overlap is there?
It really depends on degrees of this particular rig on here.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're bringing it into AVP, you can do basically what's called a dirty stitch. So your stitch points are already overlapped for you, and you would get like a proxy viewing mode before you even step into the stitch.
Before you even stitch it?
Yes.
Wow.
That's part of the kind of import.
That's nice.
The Omni importer that we've created that's coming out when this ships. So that's taking a lot of those pain points away from you.
Wow. And now you're not going to wear this on your ski helmet.
We've done that already.
Have you really?
We have content at the booth, skiing and snowboarding.
It's a little big. How much does it weigh?
It's not that much. We're just talking a few pounds here on that. Obviously, traditional GoPro cameras, people are used to this,
this
on their helmet.
This revolutionized the action camera because you could wear that on your gear, on your head, or anywhere.
It's kind of only up to your imagination where you want
I have every possible mount, including the really dopey-looking head strap. Where it goes right there.
But it's a good perspective. It's
my perspective. Yeah. I like shooting that way, but people really look at you funny when you do that.
They do, but then when they see the content, they don't question it.
They love it. And, you know, I have the black, and I love it. I'm excited, though, to see a 360. I'm really all in, I think, in the future. Especially, this would be a great studio camera for us.
Oh, yeah, for the show.
Because our audience in the middle of the show, right?
Yeah.
Now, you can't yet stream live from this, though, right?
We're showing a live VR demo at our booth right now for broadcasters.
What do I need to stitch it, though? I mean, you can stitch in real time?
Yes.
Get out of here!
This is not the live VR one, but we have a custom solution.
You're getting there.
Live VR.
You're getting there.
Yes.
See, that's what's most interesting to me. Yeah. The Ozo, we shot some stuff. It's 4 hours to stitch 4 hours per minute of video.
Yeah.
So that's not quite real time. It means we can shoot something and 5 days later it'll be done stitching.
Yeah.
How fast is this to stitch after the fact?
So with the Omni rig, we brought this outside last night and we can turn around a shot, you know, at least the dirty stitch within an hour or two.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is really great. And I look forward to seeing the live streaming too.
Yeah, this come by great. The booth. We're doing it at our booths at 3:30 every day.
John, we should get an Omni, I think. I've been looking for the one, first of all, that we could afford. It's the only one we can afford, really, right? And the quality is excellent. I mean, I would say the quality is as good as anything I've seen out there, including stuff that costs a heck of a lot.
Well, the cool thing about it too is you can download the GoPro VR app. That just hit iTunes and Google Play Store today.
Oh yeah,
and you have a way to distribute your content
with Cardboard or or the Gear VR. Does it work on the Gear VR?
So with GoPro VR app, it's iOS, it's Android, and it's desktop enabled.
Okay.
So there are ways to...
It's not for the headset. It's just so that you can swipe
around. Well, there are ways in some of the headsets that you can pull up URLs into that. So there's ways that they have it through either Rift or Vive.
Yeah, because I have a Rift. I want to do this on the Vive and the Rift.
Yeah.
I think our audience probably has at least Cardboard, right?
Yeah. Mobile, still to this day, if you don't have an HMD, like a Rift or a Vive, mobile is still
Know, moving the phone around and looking up and down. I think that's great. It's a great experience.
Yeah.
It works quite well. Wow, how exciting. Well, thank you, Jim, for coming by. I really appreciate
it. Thank you guys for having me.
Jim Godoldick is a cinematographer himself. But also is the cinema broadcast and photo marketing manager at GoPro. Good gig.
Yeah,
it's fun. Yeah. Are you thinking about things you can do with this now for yourself?
Oh, yeah.
What do you want to do with this next?
Well, I think this changes the shift on storytelling.
It does.
Yeah.
Because the story's all around you now, right?
Yeah.
That's very different.
So cinematographers, directors have to be choreographers now.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to learn a little bit more about post-production, maybe a little bit more about visual effects. But I think what's happening too is rigs like this that we're creating and solutions is it's inevitable that what's professional today will trickle down to the consumer in a very near future.
Oh, yeah.
We do have, you know, and we did announce that we are working on a consumer spherical solution. We haven't said anything more than that, but Nick Woodman, our CEO.
I mean, even less than this?
Could possibly be.
Wow. I have a Ricoh Theta S. I use it all the time.
Yeah,
$350.
It's
great, but the quality's not great. I would love to see the kind of quality I'm getting out of a GoPro.
And I think that's, in something like this, what still sets a GoPro solution apart from a lot of the others, either higher end or even below, is just, you know, the all-inclusive end-to-end and then price-to-entry is... You don't have to buy the whole kit. If you have a bunch of GoPros lying around,
we'll sell
the rig only.
Oh, wait a minute, because I do. We have GoPros everywhere. I'm completely GoPro-ized.
So if you have...
They have to match? They have to be matching models?
They should be all Hero 4 Black editions.
Hero 4 Black, okay.
And what you can do is, if you have a license or you have another stitching solution that you use, you can just get your cameras. When you buy the rig, you get access to the firmware, and that allows the firmware to talk to the hardware here, and then you're off shooting.
Wow.
And that's only $1,500.
All right. Now we're getting there. I'm just going to take a picture of you and me. And the beauty of this is I used to have to aim my camera. It doesn't matter anymore. I just put it out there.
It's so much easier.
And it's taking a picture of all of you at the same time. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Nice to meet you, Jim. And this is really exciting.
Yes. Great, I can't wait to see you guys start using it.
We will. I think we put you right in the middle of the shows. Wouldn't that be
awesome.
Great?
Yeah.
You weren't recording now, are you?
No. No, I wasn't recording now. Okay, this is capable. So it's not a dummy.
How
unit.
Soon?
So pre-orders went live 8 a.m. today. It is shipping this summer.
Oh, gotta get in line.
Yes.
Another thing for me to spend money on.
Awesome.
How about audio? How do we handle that?
So, audio, our good friends at Sennheiser have a really cool tetrahedral mic solution.
Ah, perfect.
And that is supposed to be very within
the you put this on top?
You could put it on top, or you can put like a little Noga arm off to the side.
And that way it's good. And when I will it then work with the Stitcher to have the audio attached to certain spatial points?
Yeah, through plugins or even through our own software, too, about getting those streams.
So if I turn my head, the sound will now come from over here.
Yeah, so if you have, you know, kind of ambisonic binaural audio of where not only you want to direct visually, but auditory, that's kind of all up to the filmmaker or content creator
these days. I'm excited.
Me
Thanks,
too.
Jim.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, appreciate it. We're live from the Las Vegas Convention Center. It's NAB 2016, the National Association of Broadcasters show. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Braintree. And by the way, you know Braintree. You probably use Braintree if you've ever paid for a car on Uber or Lyft. When you know the beauty of it is you get to where you're going. You say thank you to the driver, you get out, and it's done. That's Braintree. If you've ever used the buyable pins on Pinterest where you're looking at a Pinterest page or even somebody else's page, and it says, buy me now. You click the pin. You don't exit the page. You don't exit Pinterest. You just buy it. That's contextual commerce from our friends at Braintree. And by the way, Braintree is great for you and your next app because it allows you to accept any kind of payment from Pounds to PayPal, from Android Pay to Apple Pay. And when something comes along new, the new big thing, maybe the next Bitcoin or whatever, you'll be able to take it because Braintree's full-stack payment platform is so easy to adapt. You just go into the control panel, you check a box, and suddenly you're taking the next big thing. No late nights, no recoding, no stress about staying ahead of the curve. Braintree Payments. Simple, secure payments. By the way, your customers will be very grateful. They want to be able to trust you and trust your payment solution. Code can be integrated quickly. And on every platform, Android, iOS, JavaScript, they support 7 different languages. .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, Python, and Ruby. And, of course, you can make it work with anything else as well. It's very simple to do. They've got a sandbox if you want to try it. Go to braintreepayments.com/twit and try it out right now for yourself. Braintree, an easy way to accept many payment types, all of them, with one easy integration. BraintreePayments.com/twit. Oh, I have one of those.
It's the Loom Cube, Leo.
This is like, show what's in Leo's purse. So I already pulled out the Theta S, the Ricoh Theta S. When the Shure lady came by, I pulled out the SM88. And you're not going to believe this, but what do I have? I have a Loom Cube. And not only that, I charged it up this morning, so I'd be ready to hit the road with my Loom Cube.
Leo.
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Mornay Sherry. We actually met before. I used to be the head of business for Nick Software.
Oh, we love Nick.
Yeah.
And, by the way, thanks to Google for buying it and giving it away and letting it disappear. But that's okay.
No, you know, I didn't have much choice in that. But, you know, I wanted to continue to solve problems in the photo industry, and the Loom Cube
was... This is so brilliant.
Well, what you're really going to love is we just attached to drones. And so now we have video-lit drone footage, which is quite incredible.
The neat thing, for people who haven't heard me rave on and on about this, the Loom Cube is a very lightweight, waterproof LED light. It's very bright. Close your eyes because I'm going to shine it. It's very bright. But the nice thing is, next time you're trying to take a picture at a nightclub with your iPhone and there's not enough light, you can use the Loom Cube both in a flash mode or a continuous light mode to shoot, and it gives you great light. You can control the... I'm doing the ad for you, Mornay.
Yeah, I appreciate
I'm sorry.
That, Leo. I really
you
do.
You can control the level of the light. It doesn't have to be blindingly bright. And actually, one of the reasons I keep it in my bag with me at all times, it's also... I feel feel like this is a great emergency light. If I've ever, the hotel is burning down and there's no electricity, I can get out. I've got my Loom Cube.
Yeah, well, I tell you, the strobe mode allows you to put it behind your car when you break down, too.
Oh, that's a good idea. But of course, it has a thread. What do they call it?
20, quarter 20.
Quarter 20 thread for your tripod. So
you
could have multiple ones.
Super busy, and I'd love to talk to you at another point.
Thank you.
You have my card. Thanks.
Thank
again,
you.
Leo.
So nice to see you. See, you didn't have to say a word. I just did the whole ad for you.
Yeah, Mornay
Sherry,
really do appreciate
Chief
that.
Visionary Officer. You crowdsourced this, right?
Yeah, I did. I did a Kickstarter for $250,000 in 30 days. We then raised $500,000, and we're now profitable.
Congratulations.
Within 4 months.
So this is all you?
Yes, sir.
Nice job.
Thank you so much.
Well
I really appreciate it.
And thank
it.
You for Nick. Nick was really great. I still use my Nick plugins.
You're more than welcome.
I use Silver Effects every single day, practically.
It's the best plugin
there's
out there.
There's no better black and white plugin.
Well,
out
we
there.
Put it in Leica Monochrome X's box, so it was a good one.
I use it with my Leica as well. Oh, look at you and your red dot.
Yes, sir.
And, of course, everybody's using Snapseed still.
Yes.
That is still the king of the mobile
apps.
Well,
we had 10 million users in 3 months.
Yeah.
So since then, it's still the number one photo app. But I know you're busy. Guys, thanks so much.
Well, you got
great
a Bud Light.
You
time
again.
To get out of here.
Yeah,
thank you, Mornay.
Thanks again.
Nice to see you.
Nice
thank you for coming
you,
by. Oh, hello. We've got the emergency folks here. Joining us now, Lillian McDonald. She's Managing Director for Echo Manny Centeno. Or Centeno, probably, right?
Centeno.
From FEMA. Now, folks, FEMA's right across the road, so we're ready for disasters. We're ready for emergencies. But I don't know about Echo. What is Echo, Lillian?
Hey, thanks for having us, Leo.
My pleasure.
Echo stands for Emergency Community Health and Outreach. We work in multilingual communities, providing multi-platform educational and emergency communications.
Fantastic.
As a part of Twin Cities Public Television in
Minnesota. Oh, that's
neat.
So you're from Minnesota. It's not a federal program, then. It's a private program.
We're a statewide program.
Statewide.
Nonprofit work. We work in partnership with government agencies, so public, private, and nonprofit organizations. So it's all three come together in a crisis because when you need it the most, most often, everybody does come together.
Yeah,
to
that's
help.
That's the nice thing.
So the key is
people are really good.
Get the message out first.
Yeah. Manny, why is FEMA here?
FEMA's here because we partner closely with the broadcasters
Absolutely.
Of the United States
yeah.
and its territories. And we also administer the emergency alert system. So all
the
those,
EAS.
The EAS, as well as the wireless emergency alerts that you get on your cell phones.
Yeah.
So we
the Amber alerts, the other alerts?
Yes,
my
we don't send those messages, but we help in the distribution of those messages to the cell phone companies and also to the broadcast.
When did that start? Because it's only recently I've been hearing the tones. We had flood warnings in Petaluma. We had a very heavy rains in L.A. as well. And I heard those alerts, and it's actually great to see that that was working so well.
Yes, it all depends on the area that you're in when you get the alert. They may have started sending out alerts just recently.
Right.
But many jurisdictions around the country have been doing this for quite a while.
You know, I, as a broadcaster, did the EBS and then the EAS tests.
Those.
Every month we'd do those tones and those tests. And we knew how important that was because in an emergency, you really need a way to communicate with everybody. But mobile devices have made that even better.
It's a good, it's an addition to our capability to reach the public with television, radio, and cable.
Yeah.
It's a good doorbell.
Yeah,
basically you
that's
get it
kind
on
of
your
what
phone.
It is.
Yeah,
it's a doorbell.
You get it on your phone,
yeah.
and then you go tune into radio or television and get the rest of the story
right.
quickly.
And Lillian, you got your smartphone. Does Echo work with this system as well, or is
we
this?
Do. And I think it's important to point out that the system is changing.
Yes,
the integrated
as people's uses are changing.
Absolutely, the integrated public warning and alert system, IPAWS. Recently, a congressional bill was signed to upgrade and include new technology and new audiences that people can get information on demand wherever they go.
Kids aren't listening to the radio or watching TV, but they've got their phone with them.
No.
I was wondering, because I saw IPAWS on the banner across the way,
right.
and I thought, what is IPAWS? So it's part of that whole alert system.
You did EBS, EAS,
yep.
now IPAWS.
Now IPAWS.
And it includes, again,
all of that.
Multi-platform.
Yeah.
Right.
Including the alert system on the phone. Mm-hmm. Presidential alert. You can't turn that one off.
No, that is a must carry by all broadcasters and cable operators.
Never been used, thank God.
Never been used, thank God. But, you know, it's the reason we have an EAS. And the president allows the state and counties and other jurisdictions to use it.
But the real point of it is in case of an emergency so grave, so, you know, a national emergency that the president needed to address. And he could use that to address everybody on their phones, on
broadcast?
He can
do that to address everyone right this second if he had to.
Wow. Let's hope we never hear that tone go off.
Well, we don't like it, but it's essential.
No,
it's important to have it.
You got to have it. Absolutely, yeah.
The other thing that I think is important is we have the capability to accommodate a presidential alert. But really, response happens at the local level. And so that could be a tornado in your backyard.
Right.
And so that's kind of why it's important that we bring together not just the technology, but the community as a whole for a holistic approach.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm an amateur radio operator. I'm a ham. And, of course, ham's a very big and important part of this as well.
It sure is.
Yeah. And I'm proud to be part of that. And the emergency systems in every community, often it's hams that are monitoring those.
Have you exercised your ham radio operation with your community partners?
I haven't yet.
Now, that's an opportunity.
I have to do that. I know. I'm a bad ham. But we have a show, Ham Nation, on our network every week. And they talk a lot about that. And I know Gordo is very active in local emergency support. So that's something that hams do all the time. Really, I think... feel it's a real privilege and responsibility that all amateur radio operators carry. So I got to get out there and start doing it. Lillian, Manny, thank you so much for the work you do. I really appreciate it. And I'm glad we could help you get the word out a little bit.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Leave those alerts on your phone.
Well, you'll probably hear them all week here as we play them here in the background.
I just took the test. You know, I work for a little broadcast company called iHeartRadio, and one of the DJs in New Orleans kind of did a bad thing. He played the EAS tones over the air, and we got a bit of a fine, millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
And so now we take the test every year, and I just took the test on what not to do with the EAS tones. Treat those seriously. You don't set those off unless there's an actual
absolutely
emergency.
And that's one of the reasons we're here, is to work with the broadcasters.
Yeah.
To do it better.
Do it better.
Do it better.
I worked at KNBR, which was the center stage. Actually, KCBS was the tent pole of all of that operation, but we used to have to run those tests on a regular basis. Hey, it's so nice to meet you both. Thank you for coming by. Lillian McDonald, she's Managing Director at Echo. What's the website? People can find out more if they're in Minnesota.
EchoMinnesota.org or tpt.org/Echo, ECHO.
Great. And FEMA, and if people want to know more about IPAWS and FEMA.
FEMA.gov/IPAWS.
That's easy. Nice to meet you
easy
both.
To find.
Thanks for coming by.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you very
it's
much.
It's really important to remember the roots of this, which is a broadcast, a trade show for broadcasters. And now my 40th year as a broadcaster, that responsibility is heavy, and we still need them. We still need your radio and your TV stations. We need them in emergencies more than ever. So I'm very glad to be able to support that and promote that and talk about it a little bit. We have used up our little bit of time here, our slice of time, because it's time for Megan Maroney and Jason Howell to get on up here and do TNT. Colleen, do you want me to wrap the special? Okay. So that's it for this day one at the NAB show here in Las Vegas, Nevada. We really want to thank all of our very, very helpful partners who made this possible. Of course, beginning with LiveU, we're in their booth at the NAB. But more than that, we're coming to you in real time from the LiveU right behind me. Pumping out 7.2 megabits all the way up to Petaluma, California, so we give you a great HD signal. Boy, that's an amazing technology. We're really, really thrilled about having the LiveU in our toolkit. And thank LiveU for giving us this opportunity to show it off. We also thank the folks at Panasonic for those incredible pan-tilt-zoom cameras. All the cameras we're using today are Panasonic cameras. And the PTZ cameras, we've got three of them, are the over-the-shoulder shot, my shot, the cross shot, and Brian Burnett, our technical director, is working on the new tech TriCaster. Another one of our partners is able to control those with the joystick on the TriCaster, and that is pretty amazing to have that capability. And as a cheapskate, I really appreciate it because I only have to pay for one person to do the job of maybe 7, 8, I don't know, quite no camera operators needed. Who else should I thank? I want to thank Braintree, our sponsor, because they made it possible with their support. Anybody else I need to thank? I want to thank Colleen for helping us put this all together, and Karsten Bondi, our producer, Father Robert Ballasier, and thanks to you for being here. We will have another special tomorrow, day two of NAB. I'll be flying back up to the studio though tonight to bring you our regular programming, Mac Break Weekly, and Security Now from the Twit Studios. I'm Leo LaPorte. Thanks for being here. I hope you enjoyed our coverage of NAB 2016, day one. Bye-bye.